Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the world's number one fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. All right, in today's episode, we have a special guest. This is actually somebody that I've followed for a very, very long time. BJ Penn, one of the best mixed martial arts fighters of all time. It's a great episode. We have a lot of fun. By the way, you can find him on Instagram at BJ Penn. And you can also check out his website, shopbjpenn.com. This episode is brought to you by the book, The Resistance Training Revolution. I wrote this book. It's coming out soon. You can pre-order it. Now, in this book, I talk all about why resistance training is the best form of exercise for most people. You can go check it out at theresistancetrainingrevolution.com. Also, we have 3 days left for our current promotion. This one's going crazy. People are loving it. We have two programs that are 50% off and a bundle that's 50% off. Here they are. The first program on sale is MAPS HIIT. That's high intensity interval training. The second program that's on sale is MAPS SPLIT. That's a body part bodybuilding split routine. And then the bundle that's on sale is the bikini bundle. All of them, again, 50% off. You can go find them at mapsfitnessproducts.com. Enter the code SPRINGBREAK with no space for the discount. Question I have for you, BJ, is because when you read about fighters, and I followed you for a long time, huge fan, and when you read about fighters, typically there's like this kind of stereotype, like they grew up in a bad, you know, home, you know, bad family life, grew up on the, you know, in bad neighborhood, and that's why they chose how to fight. Your story's a little different, right? How did you grow up, and then what made you decide? Because you're one of the most, in my opinion, natural fighters in the sense that you could tell you love fighting. How did you grow up, and then what made you choose to fight as a career?
I was born in Honolulu. I was born on that island. When I was three, my mother moved us to the big island in Hilo, and grew up over there, went to Hilo High School, and I always just kind of liked fighting, thought it was cool. I would ask my uncle, like, oh, who's the, they would play racquetball. I'd be like, oh, who's the toughest guy here? Is it you? Is it him? Is it this guy? And I was just, yeah, I was always into it, and loved wrestling. I loved Rocky Balboa. I loved Hulk Hogan. You know, I loved all that WWF. I loved all that stuff. And, you know, I got into jiu-jitsu kind of. Some guy moved on my road, and he did a couple of jiu-jitsu lessons with Ralph Gracie. And then he saw his kids walking around the road, walking home from school and stuff. And he asked my dad, he was like, hey, have your kids come down and work out, do jiu-jitsu with us and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's a waste of my time. I'm already the toughest guy in the world.
had that attitude.
I was already always, you know, thinking I was tough. But I was still a small kid, 16 or 17. And then my dad's like, just go down one time so this guy stops asking me. But my dad was a judo black belt, so he was kind of like glad the guy was asking. But he was just like, you know what? You don't want to do it. Just go down one time. I'll tell the guy you don't like it. And then I went down and wrestled around with the guy at the rec center over there. And I was like, he choked me out and he arm locked me. And I was like, you know, this is, because I saw UFC and stuff, but I didn't care. You know, I was just kind of more into boxing and different things. And I just kind of thought, man, with this, I could kick everybody's butt in Hilo.
you know what's funny? I have a friend that I went to high school with, and he grew up in Hawaii, and he used to tell me about the fighting culture in Hawaii, where he'd say like, oh yeah, if you have a problem with somebody, you could just fight it out, and people will let you fight, and whoever wins, there's respect there, and nobody's trying to shoot each other or whatever. Is that true? Is there like a fighting kind of honor culture there? And did that contribute to, I guess, the way you fight?
Yeah, as soon as the fight would break out, always in high school, everybody would start yelling, one-on-one, like no jumping in, you know, just, and people would fight and stuff. And then when UFC came in, all that just kind of changed everything, right? Mm. Everybody started choking each other and all kinds of stuff. But
do you remember your very first fight as a kid? Do you remember the very first one you got into?
You know, it was, I went to, my uncle came to my Hall of Fame and I made sure to put him at the beginning, and I said I needed to talk about my uncle there, because he's the one who told me. He said, go get your toys back right now.
So, go get your toys back. How old were you?
Oh, I was just a little kid. Yeah, I was just 5 or 6. And he's just like, go get your toys back. I go, oh, but he bit me. And he goes, well, then you know what to do. Go get your toys back. But now, remember, yeah.
I'm assuming you got your toys back.
Yeah, I got them back.
All right.
Now, when you did jiu-jitsu, you were the prodigy, right? You were the phenom. You entered into jiu-jitsu, and at the time, no American had won a major jiu-jitsu tournament, and you did it, and yeah. You trained.
Well, got their black belt.
I think in 3 years or something like that. Like, were you just a natural when you first started training, or were you just obsessed with it, and so you studied it all the time?
You know, I didn't know what I was gonna be when I grew up. I didn't know if I was gonna be hanging down at the beach, drinking beer like my older brother, or what kind of things I'll be doing. So, you know, when I got into jiu-jitsu, I just it was just something fun. I think before desire, before dedication, it just starts with love, and I just loved what I was doing, and I always wanted to be a tough guy. I loved watching Hulk Hogan, Rocky Balboa, all those things, and just wanted to be somebody. And people ask me how you got into fighting, and I'm like, well, I wanted to be on TV, but I couldn't sing, I couldn't do anything. This is the best thing I could do.
Wow, yeah, it worked out for you.
Yeah. So when you were training and when you did some of those first tournaments in Brazil, how did they react to this American that was kicking everybody's ass? Were they cool about it, or were they mean?
You know what? I came from I had a good gym, a good team behind me. It was Andre Pederneris, that's where Jose Aldo and Leo Santos and Shaolin and many other great jiu-jitsu athletes come out of that school. Yeah, there, you know what? I think it was a good thing that I had a big group of people behind me. While I was there, and a bunch of Brazilians, they were pretty nice. They're especially the group that I was from. They always supported me, always helped me out, and everybody was always pretty nice and pretty respectful. Actually,
yeah, one memory I have of one of your fights that I'll never get out of my head, and I almost feel like there's some fighters that are, you know, they're fighters, and then there's fighters that are like, whether they get paid or not, this is what they're supposed to do. And there's something I don't remember who you fought. I can't remember off the top of my head. But at the end, you won, and you licked the blood off of your, you know what I'm talking about. You licked the blood off of your, it was the other guy's blood off your own glove. And you were like, and I'm like, this guy, if this was 1,000 years ago, you'd just be in the.
Yeah, he lives for this.
Yeah. If it was 2,000 years ago, you'd be in the Coliseum. This is what you were meant to do. Did you know this about yourself, that when you get into, how do you feel when you get in these fights? Do you become a different person?
I always say, no, that wasn't me doing that. But no, we always make a joke that
there it is.
I guess that was me.
There's the proof.
No, we always would make different jokes, because that's what they would do in the old Hawaiian days. We would hear the stories that the sacrifices would be long-legged fish. So they call them long-legged fish. But yeah, we just... That's when you just, you're intense, you're into it, right? You're just
in the moment, right?
In the moment.
Now, were you ever scared? Did you ever enter a fight scared?
Yeah, for sure. You're scared, you're nervous. But I was talking to Adam a few times, and the antidote for anxiety is confidence. You never got to worry about anxiety once you start being confident. And you know, you just kind of remind yourself about what's going to happen. You can sit there all day, but no amount of anxiety is going to help anything. Just know what you're going to do, whether you're walking into a fight or walking into a business meeting or walking into anything.
I imagine, though, it's got to be like anything else, where some things you have a lot more confidence in others. Like, are there times, can you recall, like, certain fighters that you were like ultra confident about, like maybe because of their style or maybe whatever, and then other guys were, you were like, fuck, this is going to challenge everything I got in me?
Yeah, I'm more nervous sometimes when you're overlooking the guy or not thinking about, like, when you're nervous and, like, crying, like, oh, I'm about to fight Matt Hughes, and I'm actually in the back kind of tearing a little because I could get sent to the hospital or something. And then when you're not as worried as that, and then you're just kind of going out, and then somebody, because anybody can kick your butt, right? At any moment, you know, anything can happen. So I think it's the ones you worry about the most is the best for you.
Yeah. And then when you get in there, right, like, you know, there's always that kind of first, especially with a very experienced fighter like you, there's always like that first minute of like posturing and feeling each other out. What's going through your brain in that time, in that moment?
Yeah, like I call it sometimes, people say, like, how is it when you're walking to the cage? I'm like, there's turbulence, but just like an airplane, you're not going to stand up and start screaming, you know, there's turbulence. But you kind of want to just get it on, get it going. Kind of even, it's the same thing as even when you're a kid and you're standing there on the soccer field and they're like, come on, start the game already. Yeah, you know, it kind of all feels the same. I guess you could say your first amateur fight could be this same feeling as your world championship fight. I mean, there's different stakes on the line, but nobody wants to get their butt kicked. And the worst thing about fighting is, right, I mean, there's different sports. I mean, a big wave could smash you and this and that, but the worst part is that guy's going to go around and tell everybody, kick your ass.
Now, you've had so many great moments and fights. I want to know which ones stand out the most, like, for you?
For sure, it's that first time I won the... I would say it's the first time I ever fought in the octagon, my first time walking in, because I wasn't just some street punk or just some troublemaker who thought he could fight. I actually went there and did it, put it on the line. And then when I beat Matt Hughes, the first time I won the belt, I think that was the last time. I think my prime was 25 years old, and that's when I just really loved it, loved the whole thing. That's why, I mean, your education's based on your appetite, and that's when I really enjoyed what I was doing.
What was the most challenging fight for you? Was it also that?
I think it's all. It's always comes back to that. It's yourself is why, and how you're feeling that day, and how you're walking, because you have all these grand dreams of, okay, I'm gonna do this fight with this guy on this day, and I'm gonna feel so great when I get there. I'll be so ready. But when you get there, you're like, I didn't feel as good as I thought I was gonna feel right now. Right, so it's kind of just psyching yourself up and keeping it, getting into it. But all the guys are tough, man. All the guys, everybody feels the same strength. It doesn't matter what weight class, or because everybody's just going at it, going after it.
Now, I've heard sometimes that even in the weigh-ins, you can kind of look into your opponent and you can see fear, or you could see a bit of hesitancy there. Did you ever have moments of that where, like, oh man, I got this. I have this over them.
Oh, 100%. All the time. You should be able to, if you're the real champion and you're in touch with yourself, you should be able to have him feel your presence the whole time you're anywhere near him. He can just know you're there and because he can just feel it. That's how strong your aura is at that time, you know?
I saw in one of your I guess, training montages, you did something that later I see other fighters do, but I think you're the first one that I saw do this. I'm sure you didn't invent this, but I saw you were running underwater holding like a big stone. What is that for? I'm assuming you're holding your breath and you're building stamina. Like, what was that for?
Uh-huh. You know what's good about that one? Is because we sit out there in the middle of the ocean and run the rocks. So when you do, there was actually a pretty heavy rock. So by the time you pick it up, a lot of your anaerobic starts to go already. You already feel your muscles start burning. So then you start running and your lactic acid filling up, and then you kind of going up to the top and just staying out there, staying calm, and then just keep going. It's a fun workout.
It looks
brutal.
I would imagine it trains like you to not panic, because you can't breathe, lactic acid, so you got to stay calm while you're working out. So it's probably
got to be a similar feeling as being choked out, right?
Maybe.
I would think. I was talking about it the other day. Every workout, whether you're doing chest or running or boxing or everything, every workout is working your confidence. That's what you're really working, right? Your confidence to do that motion, that nervous system motion or whatever it is. And I think that's just one more thing to work your confidence.
How often did you fight somebody that you really wanted to punch in the fucking face?
Jeez. You know, even if
because you're a nice guy, yeah, you're a nice guy.
Even if I didn't want to punch him, then I'd try to make up some reason, you know, try to get something more, you know, yeah, to get into
it. Said something to my mom.
There's got to be guys, though. There's got to be guys that there's got to at all the fights you've had. There's got to be some that you were really looking forward to punch him in the
face. No, there is, but there's all kinds of walks of life. There's like people who are assholes, and no matter how much times they get their butt kicked, they're still the same guy. So you got to respect them too. You're like, man, you know what? You're a true, you're
an authentic
you're
asshole.
You're a true punk. Yeah. You know, it doesn't change them no matter what. Authentic.
Yeah. How about favorite people? Are there other athletes that you've become really good friends with through the fight game?
Yeah, I would say Matt Hughes, Jens Pulver. Mm-hmm. I got tons. Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, Michael Bisping. I mean, the list goes on and on forever.
Oh, that's interesting. So I didn't know that
Joe Stevenson, a bunch.
So a lot of guys you fought you ended up being good
friends. Yeah, I guess you share things. And even sometimes when you're a kid, you get into it with somebody, and later on in high school, you guys are friends later or whatever. Respect, you know? Yeah. You guys share a moment in time that just you two share. So a lot of respect there.
Who hit you the hardest? Who punched you the hardest?
The hardest? Jeez. You know, I think it was had to be Matt or George, both when they hold you on the ground and they start elbowing. I remember one time when I fought Matt Hughes the second time after beating him, and I kept running my mouth, talking in the media and this and that. And when he finally got me on the ground and he stood up and he threw his elbow down and it just missed me, hit the ground, and I thought, oh my God, this guy wants to kill me for all this stuff I've been saying. Man, there's some, those two, like, because as far as if I ever got concussions or anything, it was from those guys.
Yeah, man.
It was from them.
What about when you're training for fights? Were there mistakes that you made? I would imagine, I know a lot of people I've trained or worked with, some of the biggest mistakes is that they overtrain, they overdo it. Getting ready. Did you ever encounter any challenges like that getting ready for a fight?
Oh, man. I was a master of overtraining and a master of undertraining, trying to figure out which one is right. And it just went so long. I mean, when I first started training, like right before the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships, I was there when CrossFit was, when they made the CrossFit in Santa Cruz, Greg Glassman. And mm-hmm. he just had that little area right on the side. It was in Claudio Franca's jiu-jitsu gym. Mm-hmm. They actually made a workout for it. It was called like Fight Gone Bad or something like that.
Yeah.
I even had to like,
I remember that I trained at Claudio. That's where I did jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. So Fight Gone Bad. And then I remember I had to write something for him because somebody tried to take the Fight Gone Bad workout and he was like, no, we made it this and that. I had to write a letter for him for court or something. But it is amazing watching how big that went.
Yeah,
but as far as the training, overtraining, because what would happen as a kid is you have so much energy and then you're like, you got your own routine already from the jiu-jitsu day. So I got what I do. Then I meet Frank Shamrock, then I'll be like, okay, let me add your routine to mine. Now I meet Tito Ortiz, okay, let me add your. I got three routines in one and I'm overtraining every day, you know.
That's gotta be one of the hardest things.
Speaking of that, I mean, you must have seen quite the evolution of the sport in general, you know, over the years and the way that they now train. And like, what would you say were some of the biggest kind of epiphanies they've found in training and in preparing fighters for their fights?
Jeez, and you know what? I don't know. I really, honest question, I don't know how much further along they are. Like, I know their techniques are because they can kick all of our butts now, but I'm sure they're still making the same mistakes, I think. I think that's a tough one. And different trainers, and I mean, I was talking about it the other day because I get a chance to look from the side and I saw some people trying to put together a fight camp in Costa Mesa and I thought, what a big cluster F this whole thing is. Now that you're getting ready for a fight, which should be the most relaxed, now you're bringing 10 people who don't know each other and trying to make them all work together and do all these things, you know, and it's, right?
Yeah,
it's
a big clusterfuck.
Right? Yeah. You think about it, right? How would anybody manage that, right?
It seems like they're trying to have their athletes learn way too many things at once instead of really highlighting their strengths. So do you think that that's something that, you know, you've seen too?
Yes, I have. I've seen that a lot. And I One coach I always hang out with, Jason Perillo, he talks about that. Because I could be like telling a fighter, I'm not a coach, right? I don't have any jiu-jitsu world champions. I don't have any UFC champions. Not really coach as much. I love to be a training partner and train with people in the gym, though. I love that stuff. But, you know, I kind of watch him and I watch different coaches. And it's like, true, you got to see what they start doing good while they're sparring. And then you start going, okay, that, do that again. Because if I go jump up and go, okay, now start punching him now. Start, you know, that's not what they do. That's not what they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do their own thing. It's interesting.
Do you still train a lot in the gi?
I do. I do train in the gi because I think it's great. It's almost like juggling for your brain to like grow brain cells type thing, because there's only like so many moves without the gi, but there's thousands of moves with the gi. So
makes you slow down too.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. But now at this age and being involved with the UFC gyms and everything, what really clicked to me was we're in Honolulu at one of the gyms, and a woman, older woman, comes up to me and goes, hey, thank you for having this gym here. And I go, no, thank you for being here. And she goes, no, I really want to thank you because I gave back my anti-depression medicine. Wow. And that's when it hit me that, because this was only, working out was only for fighting for me my whole life. I've only thought about trying to fight with people. That's why I want to work out. And then I realized, no, it's for your mental health. That's what this thing is. It's all about your mental health. You're in there, you're working your physical, but that's the whole thing.
That's why you never want to stop.
Yeah, and because I look at this today, I'm like, it's easy for me to go, oh, I did this for the last 20 years. I don't want to do this. I want to do something else. But no, it's for my mental health. Get back in there and go do it for fun. Feel a lot better later. Get my endorphins, get everything smiling. I can actually walk around the gym and see people who just got there and see people who have the natural high. Like they're almost drunk where they are. They're having such a good time talking after the workout. Absolutely. I can totally see that difference. The people who just walked in are still in that, trying to get out of that depression, and all the other people are laughing, jumping up and down, joking around.
So absolutely. True. Talking about stopping, how hard was it for you to hang it up?
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, you always think about, because it's like, I've just been hanging out at the Ruka gym and I've just been giving all their young fighters fits and working out with them and stuff, you know what I mean? And you're just like, but you know, it's about your hunger. It's about who wants it the most, and that's all. It doesn't matter who's the best. It's about who wants it the most. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you got to know that your kids are more important, or this is more important, and other things. And then you just realize, like, well, that's right. Taking my kids to Disneyland is more important than walking around with my ankle can't work because I broke my leg last night in the fight or whatever it is. Yeah.
I'm a big jiu-jitsu fan, and I trained for years. And so I want to ask you, because I consider you one of the best jiu-jitsu guys in MMA, but also just pure jiu-jitsu, phenomenal. Who are some of the best jiu-jitsu guys you've rolled with, and who had the easiest time, or who did you find could tap you out? Because there's some guys out there that are just, you hear legends, right? You hear stories about them.
Yeah. So of course, Half Gracie helped teach me. He was amazing, unbelievable. I kind of emulated my style after his, like when I first get into the UFC and just be ready to fight, and kind of emulated after my teacher at the time. It was Half Gracie. And then I went to work out with his cousin one day, who's Higan Machado, and he really impressed me. It was unbelievable. He was huge, but he didn't use any power, just used all technique and just tapped me out like a baby, played around with me. Then I remember when I got older one time, I was fighting Henzo Gracie, and so I had Alan Goiz come down and hang out. And so I did a training where I was like, okay, I'll use this Olympic wrestler and then you, and I'll go back and forth. And during that training, Alan Goiz tapped me out 3 times. So the next day I said, oh, no, just me and you. And then he tapped me out 3 times again. And I go, master, nice to meet you. Wow. Nice to meet you.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was so awesome. But he's still around. I always still see him. But there's always new people coming up. I just can't imagine how good the people are now.
Now, watching the prime fighters now going, how do you think a prime BJ would do? How do you think 25-year-old BJ? How do you think 25-year-old BJ would do today in the UFC?
Yeah, I would make sure to learn everything I need to know to beat these guys. Mm. I would crush these guys.
He's BJ, dude.
What things would you? What other things do you think you would add, or would you change anything? Yeah,
you know, Jason Perillo, my old coach, he was talking to a Russian thing yesterday, and they were talking about that all the Russians were upset because he was saying that I'm the greatest lightweight, not Khabib, and this and that. He was talking to them, and then I was on the side, and he was, he heard me say, I didn't know who he was talking to. I'm like, 25-year-old BJ Penn, kill these guys. Ask them why he's only got the 155, not the 172. We all know why. Then I find out it's live over there. I'm like, oh, you know, but it is what it is, right? I mean, if he could get the 170, why wouldn't he? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't Khabib go get it if he could?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he go beat Usman if he could? Mm-hmm. I think we all know why.
Yeah.
Now right? a lot of fighters and a lot of athletes in general, after they stop their sport, they start to lose their identity. They sometimes go through depression, trying to find themselves again. Did you experience any of that?
Not, you know what? I think I'm much more well known today, I think, because the sport's growing so big, so more people know who I am or not now, you know, because of the television and stuff. But the identity that I lost was, what do I do? You know, what do I do? No camp. What do I do in this time? And trying to put all everything together, put all the pieces together from, right? Because I would go just hang out for a few months, and then I'd go to fight camp for 2 or 3 months, and I had my year always set for the last 20 years. So mm-hmm. now, sitting around, I do miss certain things, and I trying to figure out how to replace some with different things. I mean, that stuff is real.
Are you pouring yourself into any other athletes, or are you kind of like, what does your training look like these days as well?
Now I just train for my mental health, and because I love it, and I feel good in there, you know, feel good sparring out with the other kids, but I try to put other things, like now doing these other thoughts and stuff with the UFC gym and my kids, and just try to put other things in those areas.
How old are your kids?
12 and 9.
Are they jiu-jitsu too?
I'm trying to get them into jiu-jitsu, so they like it here and there, but
yeah.
But it's kind of it's not too bad of a thing for me, because I've been around jiu-jitsu so much. It's not bad if they want to be at the soccer field or somewhere else, you know, because I've been around that so long. But, you know, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, BJ, I want you to school me on the history of Ruka. I know that you're very close to them. I believe that you're a big part of what helped blow them up, because before you, I didn't know of Ruka. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody rocks RVCA now, so... school me on the history of that and how that happened with you.
Okay, so Ruka, this guy, Pat Tenori, his name is Pat Tenori, and he had a partner whose name was Conan Hayes, a professional surfer from the Big Island of Hawaii. So Pat saw me doing jiu-jitsu at the Brent Event Center down here in Santa Clara. He thought I was Filipino, but then so all that time he thought I was Filipino, but my dad's Irish and my mom's half Native Hawaiian, half Korean. And so, but he thought I was Filipino, and then kind of had a connection, just kept he talked to me a few times, and then he gave me a shirt, actually, that back then it said Jiu-Jitsu We Fight. It wasn't Ruka yet or whatever, and then he kind of made Ruka in his garage, and it just kind of got bigger, and he just made the coolest clothes, you know, just the coolest art and the different things, and he just had a great idea, and here we are together. And he was one of the first guys of the any brands or whatever who kind of like did a sponsorship thing and kind of stuck it out, because the other brands were like Tap Out and all the different brands, but he was like a real brand that was kind of out there, like a Quicksilver type thing, right? And he really supported the sport, and he's a jiu-jitsu black belt under Alan Goez. Okay. And yeah, so.
So now, can you share, like, what is your, are you still a sponsored athlete through them, or do you have some sort of a partnership or stake in the company at all?
Yeah, no, still a sponsored athlete to them.
Okay.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, cool. Good deal. Yeah. Now, talk about you and UFC gyms. I know you have some gyms in Hawaii. How did that all get started? How did you end up working with them and starting some gyms out there?
Yeah, so Dana and Lorenzo came to us and talked to us about that they were going to do UFC gyms, And I from day one, I was on board. I thought it was a great idea. I wanted to be involved, and we jumped in right away. And it took a little while, about a year maybe, and then we started moving on construction. Adam came down and gave me a sledgehammer myself and let me smash the place down. Right?
Good deal.
We did that, yeah. And then it was the place where we put the gym is a legendary nightclub place that I used to frequent all the time. Oh, so yeah? It just was perfect at the gym. And it,
nice little transition.
The place
there
was called Pipeline. Yeah, it was called Pipeline. And yeah, nice little transition that's actually the gym now.
That's great.
So, that's wild. Yeah. And now, you know, I know Hawaiians are very proud of their heritage. You're like, I know you're a celebrity anywhere, but are you like a king over there? You must be like the biggest, you know, when you go over there, how do the people,
a big deal over
yeah,
there.
Yeah. How are people with you in your, where you're from?
Oh, everybody's very nice. Everybody's, always, very they always have nice things to say, and just it's good to see everybody, and it's good because where I am in Hilo, it's not really that many people, so what we always say, we're everybody's famous in Hilo because they're all always out the window, all of us, right? Mm-hmm. Waving at other people. But yeah, on the main island, the island with the city, Honolulu, it's good to go over there and see everybody and be an inspiration in whatever I can, or do whatever I can.
Well, speaking of people being nice, and everybody is nice, and I would be mad at myself if I didn't hear your full side of the story, because I don't think you commented much on it, but there, not that long ago, you got into a bar fight, and you can tell in the video that you were wanting nothing to do with it, and then end up whooping the guy's ass afterwards. I want to know how that all transpired. Like, how did that happen? Where were you at?
Yeah.
What was going through your head?
Yeah. No, I don't know why. The guy was... My friends was sleeping at my house for weeks before that, but
he was sleeping at your house.
Yeah, we all know each other.
Oh, you know the dude.
Yeah, we all know each other. And then I don't know if he got mad, he got jealous. I don't know if girls were giving me too much attention in the place or what.
He just starts talking shit after. I mean, I'm sure there was drinking involved, right?
Yeah, and then I don't know. I don't think he thought.
He obviously didn't think it through, because the last person in the world.
Right, exactly. He's got to know your skill set. I can tell in the short clip that I've seen, you can tell you don't want nothing to do. Like you don't want to put the guy down.
Yeah. It's sad because he always wants to like be my friend now or whatever, right? But it's better we keep each other's distance. Because he actually, after that, he went to the police and tried to put a
restraining order.
Yeah, restraining the police. And they're just like, what? You attacked him. You know what I mean?
Wow.
But
does that happen often, you know, being a professional fighter who's well known? Does that happen often that people
want to test you?
Yeah, try to mess with you? Or is it more? Or do you get more respect because of it?
Yeah, no, you get a lot of respect. Everybody's nice. Everybody's okay. Nice. Just
every once in a while, a drunk friend wants to fight you. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so crazy to me. So, are you still based out of Hawaii?
Yes, I am. Hilo.
Yeah. So you're never going to move out of there.
You know, we were talking about maybe doing some different things or stay up in California to work with the UFC gym for a little bit out of the year. Because actually, my kids are up here right now with their mother. Their mother's married to someone else, so they're up here with that family. So, it'd be nice for me to be around, and I just want to be around where my kids are.
Now, BJ, are you following the UFC closely? Do you watch all the UFC fights, and you know all the fighters that are fighting right now, or do you kind of like whatever?
You know, My favorite ones that I know and I like, and I want to see the big fights and stuff, but I can't. It's so big now, the sport. I can't keep up.
That's how I felt. I was a huge.
Yeah, got away from me.
Back when you were fighting, it was like, how often do we have a UFC fight? It was like once every few months.
Yeah, once every 3 months, right? Yeah. Few times a year.
Yeah, so it was. You could follow almost every fighter. Where now, there's so many names I don't even know. So who are your favorite people to watch right now?
My favorite to watch right now, who's in? What? Well, the last fight was Adesanya, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, all of the champs, I always, maybe not the bottom guys, I don't know, but I always know who the champs are at the top. So Stipe, who's at the 205 now?
Isn't Stipe fighting?
Oh, yeah, it's that guy who just beat Adesanya. Mm-hmm. Jan Blachowicz.
So. Oh, right.
But the last fight I got really excited about was John Jones versus Daniel Cormier, because that was like the two top guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like the two best guys, and then John Jones won that one. But she's that's a couple of years now. Time flies.
Yeah.
Any for sure. Now you also a fan of boxing. Did you have any favorite boxers throughout history that you used to like? Yeah,
man. I remember when I was a kid, my favorite fight is Evander Holyfield and Riddick Bowe 2. I remember that. So it was a great fight. Riddick Bowe beat him the first one, and then he came and he beat Riddick Bowe back the second one. I loved boxing up. I liked Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, of course. All the guys, Gerald McClellan, or all the different boxers I remember. Julio Cesar Chavez, all those guys, I remember them.
Any styles that you would try to, because you were also an exceptional, I mean, your hands were exceptional in the octagon as well. Were any boxers that you would emulate?
I would try to do things that I saw Evander Holyfield do. I try to do things, all the guys, anybody I could pick up. Aaron Pryor, I would always watch that guy for boxing. I would try to relate as much as I could to MMA and just kind of like, because it's all right there, right? It's mm-hmm. what you think, what you believe is true. And I try to emulate there, because they would always say, oh, Roberto Duran, he just wanted to beat people up. So, okay, I just want to beat people up.
You know, so many MMA fighters today, I feel like they have so many disciplines now underneath them. If you were to build like the ultimate fighter, like what would be the three, you know, disciplines that you would make sure they trained in?
Right, because you got judo. Now there's all of because before we always used to just think jiu-jitsu, wrestling and Muay Thai or kickboxing, but then now there's judo.
There's so many now.
And then everybody forgot about the spinning kicks, and then people started using them and knocking everybody out. And,
right.
I don't know. I try to tell people when they say, I want to get involved with the sport, I say, well, what do you love the most? Do you like boxing? They go, what do you mean? I go, do you like boxing? Do you like grappling? Do you like wrestling? What do you like? And when they tell me, and then I tell them, go as far as you can in that. First. And then first, boxing, maybe try to go to the Olympics or do whatever, or jiu-jitsu, try to go see how far you can go in jiu-jitsu tournaments or whatever. And then later on, try to add all that stuff in. And still till today, because people ask me about jiu-jitsu, and I tell them, no, it's not all you can't just have jiu-jitsu anymore to be a UFC champion. For offense, it won't work, but I still believe that jiu-jitsu is still the best self-defense, because you're not supposed to be fighting, you're supposed to be running. Mm-hmm. And if they do catch you and grab you, and then you can protect yourself from jiu-jitsu and choke them out or armbar them and get up and run away again. So I still think jiu-jitsu is the best self-defense form.
I agree.
Well, I mean, I feel like we saw that before UFC became really popular and it was underground.
Style versus style.
And we saw Gracie's mm-hmm. hit the scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were beating up dudes twice their size.
Right.
With jiu-jitsu. Well, I know for me, it's the one full contact martial art. So like, you know, boxing's full contact, kickboxing, Muay Thai, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is the one where you see a lot of times small guys beat big guys. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, it's probably the only one that has absolute categories where there's no weight class. And oftentimes the winner is like a 160-pound guy, 170-pound guy. You don't see that with boxing. You know, you get a big boxer against a small boxer. Small boxer can be good. Big boxer might kill him, right? Jiu-jitsu, not so much.
Or you don't see that just even in today's UFC with like Khabib being a wrestler. And then Usman being a wrestler, he just kind of already thinks like, well, maybe I can't beat him. Because in wrestling, you don't think about that as much, right? And jiu-jitsu, we were always used to having the absolute division.
Yeah.
You do your weight class, you see how you did, and just for fun, you'd go jump in the absolute division. So I think we were always used to that. Mm-hmm. You know, and jiu-jitsu is made so the small man can beat up the big man.
Absolutely. You ever roll with like some of like the legends like Hickson? You ever roll with Hickson?
I never got to roll with Hickson. Because I was out there, and then I fought with Henzo and different things.
Oh, so they're probably like, no, we can't fight with
you. Yeah, but can come out and hang out. We're all friends, but as far as the training goes.
What about Marcelo Garcia? You ever roll with him?
Never, no.
Oh, man, I would have loved to seen that, man.
They all came after Marcelo and all the guys.
Excellent, man. Well, I'll tell you, I've been watching you since forever, and it's an honor to have you in the studio.
Legend, man.
Thank you, guys. I'm happy to hear you doing what you're doing with UFC Gym, so you could just take your energy and direct it towards helping people.
Great partnership.
Partnership, improve their fitness and health. And so thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, no, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, definitely.
Great time. Thank you.
Awesome. Look, you can go to mindpumpfree.com and download all of our guides. They cost nothing, so we got a bunch of them for free. You can also find all of us on social media. Instagram, you can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal and Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.